Representative Prisha, did you have a chance to review the minutes from our previous meeting?
I lived them. And I approve.
Thank you. All right, Representative Prisha approves adoption of the minutes from the March 21st meeting. Any discussion, questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Prisha. All right, so we've got a number of bills to hear today and a couple of holdovers that we weren't able to complete Tuesday and Wednesday. So we will start, first of all, with Representative Knobloch. So, Representative, if you are ready. And while Chair Knobloch is moving to the testifier table, I will go ahead and move that House File 1708 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. That it is my intention today to lay the bill over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. And welcome, Chair Knobloch.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I have a primarily a technical amendment, the A1 amendment, that I appreciate if it would be added on.
Yes. So, members in your pack, it's the A1 amendment. It's H1708A1. And to get the bill in the shape the author would like, any further explanation needed, Representative Knobloch? All right. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The bill is now in the shape the author would like. A1 is incorporated. Representative Knobloch, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1708 allocates $80,000 to the St. Cloud Promise Neighborhood Organization. The St. Cloud Promise Neighborhood Organization is located on the southeast side of St. Cloud near Talahi Elementary. Talahi has the distinction of having the highest level of free and reduced lunch in the St. Cloud School District at over 90% free and reduced lunch. It also has a significant minority population. The City of St. Cloud has for a number of years allowed the Promise Neighborhood to locate in a park building in a large park on the southeast side. And I have with me John Smith, the director of the Promise Neighborhood Organization in St. Cloud, who will talk about some of the work the Promise Neighborhood does and how they use this funding.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is John Smith. I'm from Promise Neighborhood in St. Cloud. Yes, we are located on the southeast side of St. Cloud. We're actually situated between two elementary schools, Talahi and Lincoln, that have a combined poverty rate of 92% for the over 1,000 kids that we serve. Our model is a family support model. We only hire staff from the community that we serve. We're here today to talk about the work that we do around academic achievement. We provide year-round quality out-of-school time programming that includes a summer camp that we partner with the school district for, and they bring teachers in. We provide one-on-one mentoring and tutoring during the course of the year. We have a math and reading club, and all of our work is very sustainable because it is community-led and community-driven. We've had lots of success when we have kids that participate in two consecutive years. This funding will allow us to add additional programming, including providing in-class support for some of the kids that we see after school.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith and Representative Knobloch. Questions from members? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Representative Chair Knobloch and Mr. Smith. I'm just wondering, when are you going to expand on the southwest side of St. Cloud?
I'm sorry?
I'm just what?
Southwest.
Yeah, what are you going to be in the southwest? I know Way Park has a lot of need, too. And since that's my district, I'm just wondering when we can expect to see you there.
Mr. Smith.
Yes, Chairman, and speaking to Representative Tice, we'd love to be able to expand to the your side of town. And actually, we probably are serving kids from that part of town because many of the kids that we serve are transient and move from school to school. And we would like to believe that the funding that we could receive from the state would allow us to grow and bring services all across St. Cloud. But we do serve kids from all across the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Representative Tank, follow up.
I just want to say thank you. I mean, even though it's not in my district, I still follow Promise Neighborhood, and you guys are doing excellent work. So please keep it up, and if we ever have the chance to talk and see if we can expand it, just let me know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, would you describe what a typical biweekly youth night might be like, and to what extent you might have the children or the young people working on that?
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes, Speaker.
Representative Erickson.
Representative Erickson. I apologize.
No, don't worry.
Some of this is a little new for me. Our biweekly math club and reading club, I think the most important thing for us is all of our activities, events, and work are coordinated by families and parents from the community that we serve. Okay, so because we understand that our kids are not going to be better off just by providing support for them, we need to provide support for our families. So what a usual night would look like, because we are resource challenged, is we rent vans from Enterprise, and we start picking kids up at about 3 o'clock. The event starts at 5, but we have kids arriving at 4 because of those logistical situations. And when they arrive, the first kids will eat and quickly move into one-on-one math tutoring, and then they will cycle through one-on-one math tutoring we have a small computer lab where the kids can connect to the software programs that the school district are using. So we're not creating new programming. We're just using the work that's already being done at the schools, primarily at Tulahi. There is a little bit of fun that happens, but our primary focus is math and reading support. We have a large group of professionals from the school district that come out to support us to make sure that the work that we're doing with the kids mirrors the work that's going on in the classroom.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So really, this is like a homework time with support for these young people. And, you know, math is fun and reading is fun, too. So
yeah.
I bet this is a great time. Thank you for the work you do, sir. This is so important to our children.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, just a question on how the children participate. Is it, you know, voluntary for the kids to participate? Do you get a lot of them or most of them that stay after? And is transportation a barrier? Is that something that you've had to work through?
Transportation is a huge barrier. All of our programs are voluntary. At any of our math and reading club activities, you will find 10 to 15 parents as well. Our work is geared towards elementary school children, but right now we have a guy, he dropped out of high school, he's trying to get into the military, so he comes by to get some one-on-one math support. We are very intentional about making sure that kids get there, so we don't get into what's going on at home and in the community. We pick kids up and we take them home. But transportation, even though we're located centrally in the community, once families move around, you know, we don't want to tell them you can't come because you live on the other side of town.
Right. Well, it sounds like a great program, and I love the example you cited, and you're really serving the entire community as well as the children in these schools. So thank you. Other questions from committee members? Right. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on House File 1708 as amended? All right, not seeing any. Any final comments, Representative Nubbuck?
Well, Madam Chair, our members, Mr. Smith is a very enthusiastic leader of his program, as you can probably tell, and he's really been a great, great asset to the southeast side of St. Cloud, and I hope we could support his request.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, and renew my motion, and the bill is laid over for today. But thank you very much for coming here to testify, Mr. Smith, and good luck. It's obviously you're running a really great and much-needed program, so thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Haley. All right. Members, if you've noticed, and we do try to establish themes occasionally in committee, and the first was on a education partnership program, and Representative Haley's bill 3354 as well. And so the chair moves that House File 3354 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but then with the intent today to lay it over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And welcome, Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. It's nice to be back today. Thank you for allowing me to present to you on House File 3354. I think it's always exciting for us to see positive results of action that we've taken in previous sessions, and especially to see when we have success in public-private partnerships. The Educational Partnership Coalition is one of those examples. You have funded this initiative in previous sessions, and today's bill is not a funding request. So first of all, I just want to say thank you for the past support for these educational partnerships. The bill really is just to enhance the accountability of the state funds that are going into these grants for collective impact projects, and just has some clarifying language that calls out to the Department of Ed when they would award these that all the initiatives awarded should be data-driven, should be locally controlled, and should, as I said, be a combination of public and private funds. What I'd like to do this afternoon is have a couple folks speak on behalf of the EPC and share with you some examples of their impact. If that's okay with you, Madam Chair, I'll just move to my testifiers.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think Mr. Ramos is going to start, and then Ms. Jenkins will offer some testimony as well.
All right. Very good. Nice to see you again, Mr. Ramos. Welcome. And please just, for all of our testifiers, please just say your name at the beginning so we get that on the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Munir Karcher-Ramos, and I'm the director of the St. Paul Promise neighborhood, located actually just outside the walls of this building. So welcome to our backyard. I'm here on behalf of the Education Partnerships Coalition, which consists of five collective impact organizations, including ourselves, the Northside Achievement Zone in Minneapolis, Every Hand Joined in Red Wing, Northfield Promise in Northfield, Minnesota, and then Partners for Student Success in the St. Cloud area. I'd be happy to share more about this coalition. You have a copy of our latest report in your packet, and opposed to me talking, I know we're short on time, so I'm just going to give it over to Ms. Jenkins, who is a mother who's partnered with the Northside Achievement Zone. After her statement, I and other coalition members can answer any questions you have. So I'll defer my time to Ms. Jenkins.
Welcome. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rashida Jenkins, and I have the great privilege of partnering with the Northside Achievement Zone. I am a wife and a mother of four, and my husband and I are both construction workers and experienced layoffs. And at some time, we had faced dilemmas whether we would be able to afford daycare or health care costs. And, you know, our son is deathly allergic to fish, and he requires an EpiPen. If anybody knows about the EpiPen, it's a good $300 to $400, and you need two, because if the first one fails, you need to have a second one to back it up. Well, that wasn't high on our list, being that daycare was $300 a week, and so we had to choose, which we shouldn't have had to do. But thanks to the partnership with NAS, we were awarded an early childhood scholarship. So we got free childcare for a year. Hallelujah. NAS not only afforded us to be able to buy an EpiPen and other health care costs, but we're also able to put, you know, money away for our children's future. Through Family Academy classes, a family coach, and supportive community leaders, my family is thriving on the north side of Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And it's great to hear the success stories coming from these Promise neighborhoods. And I know you're one of many, but thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
Are there other testifiers, Representative Haley, or others who want to talk to the program?
I don't have any additional testifiers, Madam Chair.
All right. Very good. Questions from members? Oh, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, less of a question and more just a quick acknowledgement and thank you to Representative Haley, to Mr. Karcher-Ramos, to the other folks who have been involved around the state with this exciting, powerful initiative that we funded. I have to say, you know, 10 years ago maybe or so, I was chair of the policy committee and had the opportunity to entertain Mr. Jeffrey Canada,
yes,
the founder of the New York Harlem Children's Zone. We had a hearing out at, we actually held a hearing out at the Minneapolis Convention Center. We filled the room. I think some of you around the table were there at the time. We heard this exciting idea that since then we have taken a hold of, and I have to say I'm really glad that we've done it in a bipartisan way. I think it was Representative Thiessen who offered the first bill for funding of these zones. but shortly afterwards, as the majority flipped, our Republican colleagues also took up the banner to continue to make these kind of investments, and we expanded them beyond the initial Minneapolis and St. Paul sites to include other communities. And my hope is, quite frankly, that we can keep growing that. Part of our ability to do that is has been what's being represented in this bill, which is to consistently identify, you know, quality standards and objectives against which we can measure that that investment. And so I welcome your bill, Representative Haley, in that spirit of really maturing the kind of information that we should have so that we can hold these investments accountable, but also so that they can guide our ongoing investment decisions and also policy decisions as well. So this has just been a really good Minnesota success, Madam Chair, and I'm real pleased to see this bill and the previous bill as well before us.
Oh, thank you, Representative Mariotti. And I was at that Jeffrey Canada meeting. Yes, I think that was my first year in the legislature. It was very exciting, and I remember that very well. So, some great ideas have sparked from that. And yeah, it's been really exciting to see how communities in our state have taken up the cause and partnered with foundations, nonprofits, with community members, with schools, and really are doing great things for families and their communities through these partnerships. So that's great. Representative Sanford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually for the author of the bill. On 2.12, you talk about the ability to have an anchor entity to manage the partnership. Can you just tell me maybe a little bit more about that? Do you have an entity in mind, or what is the process in determining who or what that entity would be?
Well, thank you, Representative, for the question. I know quite a bit about that because I actually was the executive director of an anchor entity when this started in my own community in Red Wing. It was called Every Hand Join. So what that means is, as you all know, when you're working on public-private partnerships and you're trying to wrap a community around a school, there are a lot of partners involved. It might be United Way, it might be parent volunteer groups, certainly the teaching staff, many, many community members. And that's kind of a hallmark of these initiatives, is that we need to support our schools and our children, and nobody can do it alone. It's a team effort, and it's a heavy lift. So the anchor entity is what provides that backbone. Everything from just the administrative, you know, needs to the meeting space to the person who, frankly, is the one that wakes up every morning and thinks about moving the needle forward. How are we going to do it in reading and math scores and provide other supports when scholarships are needed? So that anchor entity is that nonprofit in the community that's the glue that holds it all together.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is just a nonprofit that would be the entity and not maybe a collaboration of different stakeholders per se?
It's the group that holds all the other stakeholders or brings all the rest of them to the table. In some of the partnerships, like I said, it could be an affiliation with a United Way. I don't know if Ramos, you have more to add to that, kind of how it works in a promised neighborhood or the achievement zone. In my community, it was a separate nonprofit foundation that hired me, and we created that backbone entity to do the work.
Mr. Karcher-Ramos.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, so actually if you go to line 2.15 or 2.13 to the point of stakeholders, it's about actually forming a cross-sector leadership group. So you're actually pulling in a variety of stakeholders. So we are the backbone organization for St. Paul Promise Neighborhood. What our cross-sector leadership group looks like is housing providers, parents, funders, our local politicians, so our city council members, our commissioners, that sort of thing. So we're really pulling together, a cross-section, of the community to really guide and think about our work. So to get to the stakeholder question.
Representative Sanchez,
one more quick one. For the author, going back to that anchor entity, is there a process? Do you have something in place that will help determine who that entity would be or what the determining process would be?
Yes, and it can be different in the communities that start this work. Certainly the anchor entity is a key funder, so that's a key component because these are public-private partnerships. And the anchor entity also has to have certainly an area of expertise in education and in the whole process of being a collaborative, that it's data driven and there are key benchmarks that they have to meet to do this work. So that can include, again, the expertise but the training of the staff, et cetera. Does that help, Representative?
Representative. Madam Chair, thanks. I'm just, yes, and I appreciate that very much. I'm just trying to see if that's, spelled out somewhere, and maybe I'm missing it, just so it's clear how, what this process looks like, how you go about it. I think this is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm going to support this. There's no question there. I'm just trying to figure out where that's determined.
Sure. I could forward to the committee the charter is probably the best way to describe it. The charter of what an anchor entity looks like in that backbone, because we do have that established. So if you'd like, I could make sure that the committee gets that description.
Thank you, Representative Haley. I think that would be helpful, and we'll distribute that to the committee members.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm on page 2 as well, line 20. Thank you for the middle school math. But then I come down to line 23, page 2, line 23, post-secondary education completion. And I'm just wondering what's the connection there? How does Promise Neighborhood, how does NAS, so on and so on, which focuses on K-12, then also take responsibility for not just entering whatever the individual's chosen post-secondary path is, but completion? What's the data exchange? How do you actually know beyond anecdotes? This one seems a little bit of a bridge, a stretch, a something.
Sure. I'll make a few comments, and then if you'd like to comment. It is a stretch, and that's, a key component of this work, is that it's long-term, and it's a heavy lift, and we want to cover that entire continuum. And so calling out that completing whatever post-secondary option a child takes, that could be military, it could be a technical certificate, it could be a four-year degree, but focusing our eye on that we're looking for, productive citizens that have a career and a stable path of employment is a very, very lofty goal. And there are mechanisms that we track that in each of our communities and then try to back into what does that look like then? If that's our end goal, what do we need to be doing from pre-K through 12 to make sure that student is ready and prepared for success? I can let you talk about more specifics, but I kind of wanted to give you that higher level thought.
Mr. Kircher-Ramos.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, so I think this point here was actually a clarification to, what we had previously written, which was post-secondary educational attainment. And we actually wanted to be a little bit more precise in splitting it out into enrollment and completion, one. And I think then to Representative Haley's point is that, so for example, the mission of St. Paul Promise Neighborhood is to you know, create a pathway of opportunities that lead to college and career success. So the work we've been doing in early childhood and the work we've been doing in elementary and middle school is always, we believe, is part of that pathway to get through college and college completion. So for us, you know, next year will be the first year where our big cohort will be moving into middle school. We've been doing some middle school work already, and our intent is to continue to follow these kids through college completion and, you know, entering, you know, an actual career. So this bill language here is sort of tightening up our language, actually not just saying attainment, but spelling out both enrollment and completion, as well as sort of getting the intent of all of our initiatives, which is to get all of our kids to college completion.
Representative Dabney.
One follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think you've helped me clarify my question a little bit. Follow or provide services?
Mr. Carter-Ramos.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, so it would be actually supporting children as they, you know, enter into college. So, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, just another comment. Part of the work is identifying the gaps, and one of the maybe simple things that we identified is that filling out the FAFSA form. So why weren't enough of our kids going on to post-secondary? And it was the completion of the form and not having the support from the parents, and the kids don't have access to their parents' tax returns, for example. So setting up workshops with volunteers or teachers that could help the child or the student fill out their FAFSA form was one thing that moved the needle quite a bit in my own community. So just as an example.
Other questions? All right. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Not seeing any. Any final comments, Representative Haley?
Thank you, members, for your insightful questions, and thank you, Representative Mariani, for your support as well over the long term that the legislature has supported these initiatives, and I appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you very much. And the bill is laid over for today. Thank you very much for being here, Mr. Ramos and Ms. Jenkins. Great to see you both. All right. Next, I'm actually going to call up House File 3796, which is a bill that I am authoring, and I'll just do it from here. And this, members, it was on the agenda of yesterday as part of our school safety list of bills that we heard, but we ran out of time. And so I will move that House File 3796 be laid over for possible inclusion or further action a later date. And this would actually provide money in the bonding bill for grants to schools or school safety projects. I have spoken with Chair Erdahl about the idea of perhaps working in some money in the bonding bill for schools. He seems to like the idea and that. So with that, I decided to go ahead and drop him a bill. I did leave the appropriation amount blank. I think that's probably better for him to try to determine within the large task that he has in developing a bonding bill. But again, in trying to provide a range of options for school districts, we've had a lot of really great ideas that have come forward. The Safe Schools Levy, two hearings ago on school safety, I had my idea about offering flexibility with long-term facilities maintenance. I think this is yet another tool for districts who may already be at their capacity with their long-term facility maintenance funds, or maybe have needs that are just not going to be met that way, or don't have other resources, property-poor district. You all know sort of the type of districts that this could encompass, could apply for grants and get some help with these critical needs. So that is basically the bill, and Mr. Nolan is here to offer some testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you gave my testimony. Fred Nolan with the Minnesota Rural Education Association, representing 224 rural school districts and 30 rural cooperatives. With the heightened awareness of student safety and the tight budget, we appreciate the creativity you, Madam Chair, and other legislators are bringing to this issue. House File 3796 to allow grants for school safety improvements, a perfect companion to your bill, House File 3320, to allow flexibility inside of long-term facility maintenance. Long-term facility maintenance is a very important bill that was passed 3 years ago. Puts all the school districts together under the statute to address maintenance issues. But there are two different groups inside that bill. There's the 25 largest school districts that still have the ability to raise their revenue, and there's a projection the November forecast is going to continue. So for them, flexibility is absolutely key inside long-term facility maintenance to make improvements in their facilities. But for the other 300 school districts, roughly, they're capped at $380 per pupil. So to give them flexibility, it's kind of a false flexibility because you can't spend the same dollar twice. Am I going to fix this leaky roof, or am I going to make my students safe with an entryway? So that's where the grants really come to the fore in this particular bill, because it would allow districts to stretch those long-term facility maintenance dollars without putting the burden on their local property taxpayers or farmers. And that's pretty important because we have less property wealth in general and less income in general than the largest 25 districts. And finally, this bill is pretty well crafted. Somebody spent some time looking at it and said, okay, how are we going to get these grants allocated? Districts have to districts have to get a security audit either from wherever they get it from or from the safety office. The commissioner has to work with the safety office to make sure that those things are well put together. And 50% of the money has to go to Great Barrier, Minnesota. And there's specific things about there's going to be no money allocated until all the bids are in. I mean, so somebody's put some detail in this, and we appreciate that and think it would be it could be well implemented. And I agree with you, Madam Chair, to leave the dollar amount open at this point. It's going to take a little time to figure out what the need is, what would be affordable. But really appreciate your creativity and strongly support House File 3796 is a powerful tool to improve the safety of our children and staff. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Any questions for me or for Mr. Nolan? Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, a question for you.
Yes.
Just as I'm trying to think this through, of course, the challenge with the grant program is some people are going to get them and some people are not. It's the nature of things. So I'm looking at the full sentence on page 1, line 14, and I'm trying to understand the prioritization, who's going to get them and for what reasons. Can you help me with that?
Yes, and I would also defer to nonpartisan, but obviously there is some criteria for the grants, as Mr. Nolan referenced. There needs to be a safety audit and looking at those things. And I do think the department will have to establish some criteria in terms of whether it's ranking proposals in terms of maybe the urgency of some of the projects versus others. And again, we do want to make a delineation between Greater Minnesota and metro mm-hmm. area, so there's an equal split there. I don't know if I'm missing anything, Mr. Strom, if you wanted to add to that.
And Madam Chair, there on 1.14, there is the direction to the commissioner as well that she's to prioritize the grants after reviewing the information she's received from others.
It helped. That helped. That the department will come up with additional criteria within the four corners of this proposal, and then rank according against that criteria.
Yes, Representative Abney, it would be my expectation that the department will have to develop some criteria for, again, I'm sure they'll get many good proposals, but how they would establish a ranking, for lack of a better term, a rubric or whatever for determining what seems to be more time sensitive or maybe more financial need than others that apply.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Mr. Nolan, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Dabney. I would anticipate this would be a good way of finding out what the size of the need is in the state, and then in the next legislative session or when the next bonding bill comes along, to be able to then size it a little more appropriately. But I don't see this as a one-and-done approach. This is student safety is more important than that, and while we may not get all the projects in the first round, we'll know what projects need to be done and can, with creativity, continue to work on those.
Other questions? All right. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify? All right. Not seeing anyone come down, I will just renew my motion, and House File 3796 is laid over. Thank you, Mr. Nolan. Thanks, committee members. Okay. Okay. Representative Fenton, are you here? And Representative Mariani, I think we're just waiting on your testifiers, so if you want to give me a signal when they're in, we'll get your bill right up.
Sure.
All right. And welcome, Representative Fenton. Good to see you, and thanks so much for coming to talk about Grow Your Own. Been a very well-received program here that we have included in our budget bill, and have talked about before in this committee. So I will go ahead and move House File 3206 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but today we'll be laying it over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. And welcome, and please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. So House File 3206 increases the funding for non-conventional teacher residency programs and other innovative programs to help schools diversify their workforce and fill high-need licensure teacher areas. So as you mentioned, I was very proud and grateful when the legislature provided $1 million for teacher residency programs in 2016. And last year, the legislature increased the funding and expanded the uses so that districts could work with their communities to develop strategies to work for their community. And the demand exceeded the appropriation. There was over $2.7 million in requests for the $1.5 million appropriation. And I think, members, that many of you were here with me when I first introduced this type of legislation, but one of the goals was to get this program up and running, solid on their feet, so that we could expand from right here in the core urban center on out to suburban areas of need to our rural communities. So this bill also clarifies the uses and timing for awarding the grants so that districts are able to recruit and operate their programs in line with the school year. And I know you're going to be hearing another bill, and I want to thank Representative Kosnick for that. And I know there are many testifiers here for that bill today as well. Why do I feel strongly about investing in non-conventional teacher residency programs? I mean, this was an area that I worked in way back when, and this is why. The national research shows that these programs provide a consistent pipeline of better prepared new teachers, resulting in significantly improved new teacher performance. It also shows that we can recruit high numbers of diverse candidates and fill chronic shortage areas. In Minneapolis and St. Paul alone, since the program started, they have recruited, trained, or currently training, or are currently training, nearly 190 teachers using the residency model, where there are over 60% of those teachers are of color and nearly half for special education, which you know there's a high need for that. They also meet student and district needs by reducing turnover. They have a high rate of retention. Nationally, these programs have 80% retention rate for 3 years and 70% for 5 years. They provide direct value and improvement to school communities and classrooms where they train and teach, especially in the hardest to staff subject areas and districts dedicated to using the co-teacher in the classroom. So in 2015 stakeholder surveys, 100% of principals reported that participating with the residency improved student learning and achievement at their school, and said participating with the residency had positively impacted the culture of their school. There's a letter in your packet from one of the graduate principals who could not be here today. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to the first of our three testifiers, Lauren Cathy. He's the HR director for St. Paul Public Schools.
Welcome, Mr. Cathy.
Madam Chair, House members, thank you for the time today. Really excited to be with you here today and talk about teacher residency programs. Our program and the program in Minneapolis, I think, are trailblazing the way for a new way of bringing teachers into the profession. We have seen the program really strengthen culturally relevant teaching and differentiation in our classroom, and as referred to by the author, really help us hit some hard-to-fill areas, special education, and hopefully in the evolution of the program, we'll be able to use it to speak to the needs of our English language learners as well.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Cathy. And you have other testifiers.
Yes, I'd like to welcome up to the stand here Mario Luna and Elizabeth Tao.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Elizabeth Tao. I am a graduate of the St. Paul Urban Teaching Residency, their first cohort. I am in my first year of teaching right now. I am a kindergarten and first grade special education teacher at Bruce Vento Elementary. I would not have become a teacher if it were not for this program. This kind of non-traditional program was one that actually worked for me, and it offered a lot of ways to break down the barriers that I personally found as a as an employee of color in St. Paul Public Schools. I was looking for a direction to go, and when I heard about this program, I really thought it is it almost sounds too good to be true. There's no way this kind of opportunity could be out there for somebody like me. 15 months, they supported you through the whole thing, and success of their residence was the number one goal in their minds. I definitely feel prepared, or felt prepared after the program, that I could do my job in St. Paul Public Schools well. And in my first year right now, I feel I've really been brought up to the challenge. Everything they prepared me for in the program has been on trend with what I've been seeing in my first year this year, and I cannot wait to continue being a teacher in St. Paul.
Thank you, Ms. Tao. And we had the opportunity to tour Bruce Vento, I think shortly before session started. Terrific school. How are you enjoying it?
I really love it. I think their model, especially in terms of servicing the students receiving special education services, is one to follow after. They've got it set up there to support those students very well.
Yeah, it's unique, and it's really seems to be working well. You could tell when you walked into the building. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mario Luna. I am a graduate of the SUTA program as well, and I currently am a junior high EBD teacher at Humboldt High School on the west side of St. Paul. I guess, like Elizabeth was saying, SUTA really just provided an opportunity. I always look back at my own education, and I always thought which teachers were my favorite, and they were the ones that took the time to just go past the classroom. And I think SUTA gives you a lot of these opportunities where they preach build relationships, and I think building relationships and giving the opportunity to people that necessarily wouldn't have them. Where I was a para after I graduated, after my 4 years, I worked as a paraprofessional at Humboldt in the same room that I am now a teacher in. So it's pretty cool that I get to have this opportunity to really see something that I wanted, and then somebody was like, hey, do you actually want it? And I was able to take that opportunity, and now I feel better about representing my community. My family's pretty proud of me. People are getting excited about Humboldt to see community members really coming in and being a part of the school now. So, I guess Scooter is just a really great opportunity.
That's great. Well, it's great to see you doing so well. You were here to testify last year, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
But I thought.
I was wide-eyed and
Well, you're still smiling. That's a really good sign.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Great. Good. Any other testifiers?
Not here with us or that I had on the schedule.
All right. Very good. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Not seeing any. We'll go to committee questions. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the last testifier, just out of curiosity, I'm not completely familiar with these programs. You said you're a special ed teacher. Are you responsible for doing your own paperwork, or do you work in conjunction with another special ed teacher?
No, that's on me.
That's on you. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chair,
with that, we'll just yield to other questions if there are any. But I want to thank you for the time.
Absolutely. Other questions? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ludovic Powell, it's great to see you both here. And Mr. Luna, I'm sure the entire Humboldt community is really proud that you're full circle with Humboldt. And by that, members, what I mean is it seems to me that one of the powerful elements of this bill, and thank you, Representative Fenton, is that it truly is about opening up opportunities for community members to be part of the professional class of teaching. And to see that happening in terms of teaching in the very communities where they've grown up, where they have strong affinities and connections, I think means that it maximizes the opportunity to be able to connect with students that probably look a lot like you two guys do. There's something very powerful about that. So I think this is just such an important investment. Representative Markway and I were just asking, chatting a little bit about the licensing process. And I really don't know. I don't think this is the case, but there's nothing about this program that creates an alternative licensing process, although it sounds to me like it could be inclusive of one. But I think the program itself, by itself, doesn't do that. So I'm just asking generally.
So this is not alternative teacher licensure. It is non-conventional pathways. So they are with a co-teacher in the time that they are teacher in training, but they have to go through many of the, we're recruiting, as Mario said, he was a paraprofessional in the classroom. So we're recruiting those type of candidates, but they spend a year in the classroom with their leader. So and they take the same test requirements and that, and then they are licensed.
Representative Mariani.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that, Representative Fenton. We're really proud of you two and the other your colleagues in this program. It's good to see you here.
Yes, absolutely. Recruit some of your friends. I mean, this is very exciting to see you here. Good. Representative Sandstead.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So when you graduate from a program like this, when our new licensure, tiered licensure, goes into effect next year, do you know what license you will fall under? Will you be a Tier 3, a Tier 4?
We will be a Tier 4.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
I just wonder, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I do in the sense that you're part of the community before, but now you have this wonderful new job and you belong, and you've expressed that very well. Is there an experience that told you inside that this is why you're there?
Off of my experience this year, I'm Hmong, and when I spoke Hmong to my students at my school, and they were really surprised and shocked that I could speak that language and there was that instant connection with them, I felt this overwhelming feeling of knowing how important my role was to serve in the school. So that was definitely a huge turning point in my first year teaching.
Oh,
Mine was my first ever staff meeting. We introduced ourselves as new teachers, and I said, I'm Mario Luna, as I'm a first-year teacher here, and I was graduate and worked there for a couple years beforehand. And everyone was just, like, stood up and applauded. And they're, like, my old teachers and stuff, so it was really cool to, like, finally, like, feel like I came home, you know, and I used as a teaching assistant, but just being one of the people that I grew up being like, man, you guys are pretty cool. Just kind of nice. It was cool.
Thank you.
Hey, any other questions? Representative Erickson. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Todd, did you do your residency at Bruce Vento as well as then get employed there, or?
I did not. I did my student teaching and clinicals at Cross Lake Elementary in St. Paul, and then I got hired at Bruce Vento after I entered into the special education pool.
And to what extent would you say your great principal has an influence on you at Bruce Vento?
Very much so. He specifically recruited me. He was putting together a PLC of all Hmong women, and there is a severe shortage of teachers of color in general, but especially in special education. I believe I'm one of four Hmong special education teachers in St. Paul District right now, and that just certainly does not reflect what our student population looks like. So the fact that he reached out to me, and it was one of my deciding factors to work at Vento, because he added that personal touch. He said he wanted me personally on the team, and he actually let me go to come and testify here today. So he really is really supportive of me, and I think it's just a testament to the program that they taught us how to be flexible collaborators with our admin instead of this hierarchy where we need to feel intimidated by them. I've always felt from day one that they've been very supportive of me, and I can be open to addressing anything with them. So the admin there at Vento is great.
Madam Chair. Representative Erickson?
Yes, Bruce Vento is one of those exceptional places, and you've done such a great turnaround in keeping students who were before very mobile and their families now want to stay so they can attend Bruce Vento because you have that no excuse theme.
Right.
And that's so great. But I think, you know, one of the strong points probably of both of your schools is you need strong school leadership too, in addition to great collegial action. And you're very fortunate, both of you. But I have visited Bruce Vento, so I know how great it is. Thank you.
Great, great. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lunez, is it?
Yeah.
I have to say, when you started your testimony, I had my head down, I was reading the materials, and I could hear the smile on your face when you started your testimony. And that enthusiasm from both of you, that enthusiasm is contagious. So when you take that enthusiasm back to your classrooms, that's going to help not only in your teaching those kids, but it's also just a great testament to this program, too. So thank you for that, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions? Well, thank you so much, and I had the opportunity to visit your school with the rest of our crew here, and I was very impressed. So fun to have you here. And closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the community. And I cannot tell you what a great feeling this is, because this started here in this committee three, four years ago. And I feel like I kind of watched a newborn baby grow into a young adult. And to see what a difference it's not only made for these two teachers, but to know what a difference they're making to the children that they're working with. So I just think this is such an important program to continue to move forward. So thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you. So the chair lays over House File 3206 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thanks so much. Okay. So next up is House File 3594, Representative Kosnick. Hmm.
All right, while you're getting situated there, Representative Kosnick, I'll just say that the chair moves that House File 3594 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with the chair's intent to lay over for possible inclusion or further action at a later date.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. It's good to be here in the Education Committee. I think this is my first bill here. I brought some snacks there for keep us awake. I know deadline week is very busy, and I appreciate the chair and the committee's time today to hear this bill. It's similar along Representative Fenton's bill, or at least a portion of it is, and so I appreciate her efforts on her bill. I'm introducing this bill, and some I serve on the Council of Latino Affairs on their executive board and as their representative on the House Republicans, and so I've been involved in this issue a little bit more, but more personally, some of you may know I was not born in this country. I was actually born in Colombia, and I grew up there until I was five, and then I was adopted. And I was blessed to have, a white middle-class upbringing. But since I've been elected, more people have been kind of interested in my ethnicity and that I am actually Latino. And as I've done some work here, it's heightened my senses a little bit about what teachers of color and the effects of the achievement gap and what's going on there. So it's piqued my interest in this topic a little bit, and I think this bill and Representative Fenton's bill does a lot for reducing the achievement gap, and that's why I'm happy to bring this bill forward from that perspective. We've got some testifiers with us to kind of go over the bill. I want to point out later on one of the testifiers will be Kevin Coons, a student from Lakeville South High School that's interested in being a teacher, that these types of bills will help him in that endeavor and in his schooling, and with him as a friend, Kira, and one of the school liaisons, Jacob. So I appreciate them coming down from Lakeville to testify on behalf of the bill. Madam Chair, would you like me to introduce the testifiers, or
yes,
do you want to go ahead? Violeta Hernandez Espinoza from the Minnesota Latino Affairs Council will kind of walk through a little portion of the bill.
All right, and please state your name for the record when you come up, and then begin. Okay.
Madam Chair, members.
Do you need help with your computer or hooking it up to anything?
We will connect it.
Right. We will get it connected. All right. If the page could help there, that would be wonderful. Thank you. All right. Go ahead. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Violeta Hernandez Espinoza, and I represent the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs.
And I am Anjali Mishra Cameron. I'm Research Director at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans.
Madam Chair, members, the State Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council appreciate the opportunity to express their strong support for House File 3594 and House File 3206 heard earlier. As to not repeat testimony, we are doing this at the same time. In the green folders within your file, you will find a joint letter of support for these bills from our councils. While each of our constituent communities are widely diverse in history, culture, assets, and challenges, our communities share major concern about Minnesota's nation-leading achievement gaps and the severe shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. These two interconnected issues affect each other. Research is clear that all students benefit from diverse teachers, and students of color in particular have improved test scores, attendance, retention, enrollment in advanced courses, graduation rates, and college-going rates. Minnesota student diversity continues to grow, now at 32.5%. In your folders, also, you will see this handout. Looks like a lot of data, but it's divided per district for each of you, all of your district diversity, student diversity by your districts and school districts. While the student body is 32.5% students of color and American Indian, the racial and ethnic diversity of student of teachers is now 4.2%. We believe that more must be done every year to address this gap. We thank Representative Kosnick, Representative Fenton, Chair Loon, and all members of this committee for your leadership and support of House Files 3594 and 3206 to help close these gaps. Finally, Madam Chair, if I may, I would like to have the educators of color in the room today who are here for a special event. Stand up for recognition, please. I think they might have left. They might have gone out. Thank you, teachers, and thank you, committee, for your time.
Madam Chair, we could have another testifier. His name is Kevin Coons, and he'll introduce himself from Lakeville South High School.
All right. Thank you, and introduce yourself for the record, please, and begin.
Madam Chairman and committee, hi, my name is Kevin Coons, and I'm a native senior at Lakeville South with family from the Sisseton Wahpeton Reservation. During my 12 years in high school, I have never had a minority teacher, and I think that's problematic for several reasons. With the exception of parents, teachers are the biggest influence in our children, shaping the way we think, learn, and prepare for the adult world. However, most of our teachers don't share the experiences that us minority students have. A teacher who has the same ethnicity as a student who feels isolated can motivate and set an example that other teachers just can't. Teachers of color also benefit other students too, because seeing and learning from somebody who's different and has different life experiences than you will help other students prepare better for the people they're going to meet, and also hopefully will abolish some of the negative stereotypes. At Lakeville South, we have one minority teacher, and I don't think that fairly represents our growing minority student group. Without teachers representing the real diverse adult world, our students are missing opportunities and education about who people are. I'd also like to thank Representative Kosnick for letting me speak today. And for any questions, I'd like to say that I don't see very many minority kids like myself thinking about teaching. And I think that's just because we don't have an example, at least in my school.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. We always like hearing from students. So I think we have a question here, Representative Peterson. Did you?
I'll wait till later.
All right. Sounds good. Representative
Kosnick. Madam Chair, the next testifier is teacher Roberta Rasmussen.
All right. Go ahead and say your name for the record, please, and begin.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Roberta Hernandez Rasmussen. I'm an academic interventionist at Central Park Elementary School in Roseville. Central Park is home to a highly diverse student population. We have 26 different languages in our school. I've been a teacher for 18 years and a student teaching supervisor for 8. I'm very encouraged that House Bill 3594 is being considered, particularly to offer financial support in affinity groups and mentorships for teachers. As a teacher of color, I've experienced racism, the reality of it, and the reality of isolation that exists in our educational system. Isolation when dealing with racism is deeply distressing. As we teach and advocate for our students and families and colleagues of color at the local and state levels, this isolation chips away at our passion and our calling for teaching. We're stretched very thin without the relationships that we need for support and mentoring that we need to learn how to navigate the system. In Roseville, we've had a district-supported affinity group for 10 years. The first 3 years, we met monthly during the school day with substitutes paid. Relationships formed during those years sustained us, and most of us remained. But as through the years, the funding has decreased. We are now, the last few years, only meeting 3 times a year, and there, as a result, has been a high turnover again of the teachers of color in the district. proposed file bill 3594 would fiscally ensure affinity groups can meet, mentoring can happen, and relationships will deepen to develop our resiliency and our sustainability in the system. In order to meet Minnesota's stated goals for teacher of color and Indigenous teacher retention, I urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rasmussen. Representative Fasnick?
Madam Chair, if I could indulge the committee with a short video about the Teachers of Color's affinity dinner.
Absolutely.
That kind of talks a little bit about the bill and why it's important.
Pathways for teaching, how to engage with social workers and psychologists. Currently in our schools, we don't encourage teaching young enough. So what if there were middle school programs for an after school for students of color to consider teaching, or similar models for example in Chicago?
I think we came to teachers at a very young age. It's all kind of laid out maybe. But if you are a career changer, it's harder to find out that information. And so I did an alternative program as part of what I did, and it clearly laid out what I had to do, and then I could also gauge the time frame it was going to take, and budget that, because I'm a career person, I can't be forever waiting. So.
What we would want to see is something that's more representative, more accessible, more interdisciplinary, because when we think of equity and we think of places where we do social justice, very often it's the STEM fields that are left out and social studies fields that are the places where we put them, and then also the sense of advocacy so that our children can advocate not only for themselves but have their families advocate for them with all the different possibilities that exist.
And even though our districts have policies that have to recruit teachers of color, there's no accountability. So it's not working. So we thought this needs to be a state bill. There should be a mentoring program outside the school for the teachers of color. Continuously, not just the first 3 years of our year, but ongoing support. Because sometimes I'm the only Latina teacher in my school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very isolating. If I had a mentoring program, you know, a mentor or somewhere I could go and talk, hey, I'm having these issues, you know, I need to come together, solve them, or I just need support.
I feel like especially the retention piece, is that what the support looks like for the teachers of color versus a non-white and a white teacher? There's that really differentiated professional development. It needs to be there, it needs to be mandated to come back to the point whether or not it's at the district level or at the state level, and that there needs to be an affinity, some sort of space for an affinity group that is not controlled by a district that mandates like this is how it should look like or this is how we're going to evaluate, because we decide what we need and what. Representative Pasnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee. Just to kind of wrap up, Kimberly Colbert from the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color would like to just wrap it up for us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Kimberly Colbert, and I'm speaking today as a co-chair of the Core Steering Committee for the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. I've been a high school educator in St. Paul for 25 years, including 2 years as an education support professional. The coalition is 1,250 people from several dozen schools, colleges, and organizations throughout the state who share concern about the shortage of teachers who reflect the racial and ethnic diversity of students. We thank the long list of agencies, organizations, and institutions listed on the backside of our bill, which have expressed support of Representative Kosnick's and Representative Fenton's important bills. Also in your packets is a document describing the shortage, what it will take to move the needle just 1% and the economic benefits of increasing teachers of color. The coalition greatly appreciates the Republican leadership and bipartisan support for parts of our bills that have become law in the past two legislative sessions. More support is needed this year through House File 3594 and 3206, and in years to come to ensure that all students have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers so they feel safer, more welcome, and more supported for success in schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank the committee for their time to listen and to continue to explore this topic, and also recognize the work that was done last year in this area as well. And with that, I'll close.
All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 3594? No? And then we have questions. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had a question on the document that had the breakdown of the diversity within our school district. And I was wondering, and this is from the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs, and I was just wondering if the percentage of students of color is the whole district that we represent or the students who live in the district, because I have a portion of three school districts. So that's my wondering how the breakdown works.
Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. Yes, that's correct. We try to cover, we realize that there's students who will go into your district because they live within your legislative district. So it does cover any district that would potentially have that case. So it's this is using NDE report card data, and so we used the district information that was provided.
Thanks.
So if there's any more technical need, they can explain how that's.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Welcome, Lakeville people.
Welcome, Lakeville
people. And Burnsville as well.
All right, and Burnsville. Good to see everybody here. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is the same on the same document. The percentage that's given, that's the percentage of diversity among the students that are in those schools in that school district?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right, how about Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, Representative Kosnick, and you may want to dial a friend with the Department of Ed to help answer this question. And this has to do with Section 2 of the bill that expands the current direct programming of 80% of the achievement and integration of Minnesota funds that are targeted for direct programming. It expands the allowable uses for that. I have to say I like them all. I love seeing ethnic studies curriculum. I think one of the things this legislature, or perhaps the next one, really ought to wrestle with is the importance of ethnic studies curriculum. So I'm real pleased to see you having language in that bill, in this bill on that. And it also adds hiring more teachers, paraprofessional, cultural liaisons, or counselors. And that's the part that kind of worries me a little bit, because I imagine that's not a that's awfully expensive. I think it's a good investment, but there isn't anything in this bill that's putting more funds into the Achievement and Integration Minnesota revenue program. And so I worry about, you know, what this might do relative to the construct of the statute that was very intentional about direct programming for students. In light of what we heard earlier from Ms. Colbert, where she was sharing the pace that we need to take in this state in order to arrive at a decent parity with teachers of color and, you know, almost one-third of our student population now being students of color, American Indian students, it seems to me that we need to be investing a lot of money into programs like Grow Your Own and other programs to rapidly accelerate the pace at which we're producing teachers of color, American Indian teachers in this state. All that by way of saying that I don't think that the AIM funds is going to come anywhere near the kind of investment that we need to make in order to achieve that. And so one of the things I don't want to do, because I do support this bill, is I don't want us to say, let's support this bill because now we've taken care of how we're going to fund, you know, that rapid acceleration we have to have in this state. But my question really goes to the first part, and I think I had a brief conversation with the department. I think they can help out with this in terms of what is the construct of current statute relative to saying 80% should go to direct programming, and what are the issues to look out for then with this new language, which now expands what that could be used for. And the department is standing, or sitting right over my left shoulder in case you're looking for
them. Representative Cosney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to have the department comment on that. I appreciate the premise of the question, and I don't know if the council would have some comments as well.
All right. Madam Chair, members, Representative Mariani. Yes. First, thank you for being a co-signer on this bill. We appreciate that support. Our goal with that was definitely not to water down the efforts, and it was really just giving suggestions on what those revenues can be used for. Ideally, we would love to see greater funds to those funds, but this is setting the base for, this is a long-term project, I think, for the state of Minnesota, and just with that context, Josh, if you have anything additional to say.
Mr. Ooney, thanks for being here.
Madam Chair, members, Adosh Uni, Department of Education. I had a brief opportunity to chat with Representative Mariani and to reflect on the bill and provide some comments to the advocates of the bill. And, you know, Representative Mariani brings up a good point about what the base intent of the bill was in terms of the majority of the funding when we have the 80% and the 20% bucket. Around, do we use it for direct programming to students, or do we use it to fill out the support system around it to actually make that programming happen? You know, our staff on the language that was added really honed in on the addition of placement services. We're looking at two different areas here in terms of filling out the structure. One, and I think Representative Mariani honed in on this in terms of around the staff when we're looking at bringing in staff that reflect the paraprofessionals, cultural liaisons, or counselors who represent the diversity of the students. Those are really about delivering the program that the beginning of the section talks about. I think from our staff's perspective, when we add in placement services, that takes on much more of an air of administrative services. And the feeling is that 20% cap around those administrative services is much more appropriate than the 80% cap. And especially when we look at the list and we see the word or being used at the in the line 3.19, there's no directive to maintain that 80% funding around the programming. So I think we want to be careful about the wording that we use here and around keeping that focus on the programming, and I think what Representative Mariani was getting to with the original intent around the large bulk of this revenue stream. But we've been in communication with the advocates, and I think we can continue to talk about the best way in terms of how, in terms of the original intent of the bill, as well as kind of what it looks like going in the future. I think we can fully respect the search for more opportunities to increase the diversity of our teacher workforce. This obviously is, you know, a very obvious place to look, but as we see from this conversation, there are some competing interests here, especially when we look at the original intent of the funding stream.
Thank you, Mr. Ooney. Representative Mariani?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ooney, for that. Obviously, as the author of the bill several years ago, you know, like most of us, we kind of tend to look and watch very carefully for things that we've authored to make sure that the intent continues to be carried out as we move forward. Having said all that, I am excited about the creativity that's involved here, and so I do commend you Representative Kosnick and to the council and others for working hard to identify in statute pieces that we can add as additional tools to the toolbox. I think it's important that we do so, though, right, in terms of eyes wide open, you know, so therefore the question about intent. And clearly when we restructured the integration revenue program, we elevated very transparently the need to for that program to achieve academic outcomes. And I think one of the things that we're hearing from the council and from the coalition that you're a member of, that you participate in, is that there's increasing evidence that shows academic outcome can be driven by having a more diverse teaching core, not just for students of color, by the way, for American Indian students, but also for white students as well. So I think there's a keeping in the spirit thing here. I do worry about the numbers. I do worry about whether or not we're going to mislead ourselves to thinking, oh, we've taken care of the problem. The AIM funding will pay for all, you know, our diversity goals here. I don't want us to assume that posture. I don't think anyone up there is assuming that. And I do look forward, Representative Kosnick, if you're open, to perhaps fine-tuning this language so we can accomplish what you want to accomplish, but at the same time continue to honor the intent of the original statute.
Ms. Rooney.
Madam Chair, I just to kind of piggyback, I think, on a little bit what Representative Mariani was doing when we look back at the reconfiguration of the Achievement Integration Program. It was really in response to an OLA report that did find that a lot of the funding wasn't used for achievement and integration purposes. We were seeing purchases around computers and other items that weren't necessarily resulting in achievement. So I think that just kind of points to focusing on, or just being careful, I think, as Representative Mariani said, in terms of the changes we make around the revenue streams and being very intentional so that we kind of honor that what those findings were from that report, and we make sure that everything is surely focused on achievement and integration.
Thank you. Representative Anselmo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question, I guess, would go with either the author or the testifiers. And I was looking at our chart, which is great, to show the diversity percentages here. And I certainly know and now have more data here about the diversity percentage. I know what it is in Edina, but the areas that are touching our district, which is probably the highest in the suburbs here now. I'm just curious to see how this program would help some of the suburban schools.
Ms. Espinosa?
Yes. Representative Anselmo, Madam Chair. Your question was, could you please repeat the question?
How does this program affect some of the suburban schools? Is this sort of across the board? Is it more targeted towards the urban schools? I was trying to gather that from the presentation here.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, so our efforts over the last 2 years have made sure that we are attending to the needs of the urban core, the metropolitan school districts, and also the rest of Greater Minnesota. So we have been very intentional in the design of these bills over the last 2 years in ensuring that we address the needs of other districts that are seeing, or I don't want to say growing diversity, because many are already very diverse. So we have, what you have here is not just one program, it's a variety of provisions to try to address the shortage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers. One of the examples on the Grow Your Own program, for example, the qualifying percentage for student diversity in the district to qualify for the Grow Your Own beyond the non-conventional programs would be 25% per the request of Greater Minnesota School Districts specifically. So we have really tried to make this an effort that addresses the whole state, because it is impacting the whole state. I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it does. I know it looks like we meet all the check boxes there, so we're above 25%. In fact, in Richfield, we're at 72, and St. Louis Park, 46. So I guess something we'll take a look at and continue in the session. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Representative Smith, I'm wondering if you're going to use your megaphone or the microphone.
Madam Chair, perhaps. We'll see how it goes. A comment and a compliment to the author. This issue is one that is very important to my district. When I meet regularly with my superintendent, this is on the list of the most important issues. I represent, have the pleasure of representing one of the most diverse school districts in the entire state. So I applaud the author for this great bill. Thank you.
All righty. Final comments, Representative Kosnick.
Well, when he's saying such a nice thing, I was hoping he'd use his megaphone. No, I appreciate the committee's time and the continued discussion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, the chair lays over House File 3594 for possible inclusion or further action at a later date. Thank you. All right. Representative Mariani is up here. Okay. And Representative Mariani is presenting on behalf of Representative Moran, House File 3887.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the appropriate motion would be to refer this to Ways and Means. And then lay over for possible inclusion.
That is correct. And so moved, Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, yes, I would so move.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
yep, we'll maybe wait. Can we ask the audience maybe to just bring the level down? Thank you so much. All right, Representative Mariani.
Thank you. Thank you to the audience members. Madam Chair, I'll be real brief. Minnesota Adult Basic Education has adopted statewide digital literacy standards as part of the education and work skill development that they offer to adult learners. This bill requests a one-time grant of $150,000 to a nonprofit, the North Star Digital Literacy Assessment, to upgrade its technology platform and teach and allow earning digital literacy certificate. This effort is supported by the AD Community Bureau and also by the Minnesota Public Libraries Association. It's frankly an ability for us to make a one-time investment that continues to further the outcomes of our adult basic education investments. So with us here today is Tom Citrin-Heisen from the St. Paul Community Literacy Consortium and Rebecca Ryan from the St. Paul Public Libraries to say a little bit more and answer the question.
All right. Thank you. So whoever would like to go first, just state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Ryan. I'm a public services manager for the St. Paul Public Library. In that role, I manage the Rondo Library, and I also oversee our workplace programs, which are about technology education, small business support, and English language learning. The St. Paul Public Library, under the directorship of former director Kit Hadley, convened some community conversations around in 2010 when we were experiencing an influx of job seekers in our libraries who needed more support on the computer than we were prepared for. So we saw this as something that nonprofits, our partners in adult basic education, our partners in the Workforce Center, community colleges, we convened these conversations because we wanted to address a community-wide solution. And out of those conversations grew the standards for adult basic education, for the digital literacy standards that make up the North Star Digital Literacy Assessment. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
So these assessments measure basic digital literacy. Once we had developed the standards, we looked around to see if there was a test that we might use. In the library field, we are much less assessment-driven than in adult basic education and education in general. So this was a new area for us. And, in fact, what we found was that nothing was quite basic enough. If you're familiar with the Microsoft certification exams, they're really quite high level. And what we needed for our Minnesota residents that wanted to go back to work, that wanted to continue on to higher education, was something that would allow them to begin to do that, to begin to learn more. And, for example, one of my patrons was taking a basic Excel class. She was a housekeeper at one of the area hospitals, and she used North Star. She passed the test, and she was able to move into a higher-level scheduling position because she could prove that she had the basic Excel necessary to continue to further her career and to further her learning.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. And next testifier, go ahead and state your name for the record.
I'm Citrin Isom, Madam Chair, committee members. I speak to you in a number of roles today, including being the manager of the North Star project for a number of years. There are 10 different modules within the assessment that include basic computer use, internet, email, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and then our most recent, a number of others, and then information literacy, which is how to find, use, and assess the value of information you might find on the internet, which is a huge issue for many of our less educated citizens. It's now, North Star is now grown very, very quickly. It's used in nearly 140 locations throughout Minnesota. There have been 181,000 assessments given in Minnesota thus far. We also have become national, international. There are totally over 500 sponsored sites around in 38 states and 3 foreign countries. But Minnesota is still the locus of where this originated and is looked upon as the one that innovates and develops these things. So the assessments went live in 2012, and as we all know, technology develops very, very quickly. So in the 6 years since we went live, the whole expectations of what basic digital literacy is have expanded significantly. So we've identified over the last several years a need to update the standards to reflect those changes, to redo the modules to reflect the increased standards, and at the same time to convert the modules to an HTML5 platform. I don't get too techy, but we use Captivate right now, which uses a Flash technology, which is getting less and less and less supported by browsers. So in order to continue to be viable, we need to upgrade to HTML5. And we also need to develop what's called a custom code base. And code bases are kind of, as our tech person explains to me, our coder, it's all the pieces like books in a library that you put together that support all the infrastructure for giving these assessments and scoring them and awarding certificates and so on. One of the real advantages of that, although this did not happen at that point, is it will give us much greater security because these are ready-made pieces that are have the pieces that make up the code base have a lot of support from coders around the world, so emerging security threats are addressed very quickly. So it keeps our learners' data much more private and safe. We estimate the total cost of the upgrade will be about $400,000, of which we've already raised $150,000, including $100,000 from the Employment Technology Fund, which is created by the Joyce Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and Walmart, and $25,000 from the Shavlett Family Foundation in Minnesota. In terms of the operating expenses for North Star, it's totally self-sufficient. We have a small sponsor fee that sites pay in order to be able to access it in an award certificate, so all of our ongoing expenses are met, but we are not able to do this upgrade, which will make us viable far into the future. The assessment is currently housed at the Minnesota Literacy Council. As Representative Mariani mentioned, it's endorsed by the Literacy Action Network, by the Minnesota Library Association, and by our own consortium. So we respectfully ask for this one-time appropriation to help us support digital literacy assessment and training needs throughout Minnesota. One thing I did want to add is everyone thinks it's older people that have difficulties with technology, and that's not necessarily true. What we find is many of the people we work with are people in their 20s who everyone thinks are very technologically adept, and they're very good at posting through their phones on Facebook, and that is really pretty much the extent of what they know how to do. So a lot of our work is in developing the future workforce and current workforce so they know how to use the technology that they'll need to get and keep jobs. So this is a collaborative, efficient, and effective program. Over 2 million assessments completed on the public website, and, as I said, used throughout Minnesota and other states as well. So we respectfully ask your consideration of this one-time allocation.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? Or member questions? All right. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Last night I was trying to figure out how to turn a Excel database into labels. I hadn't done that in a number of years. I see some folks kind of smiling. They made it much more complicated. It took me a while. I did it, though. But, you know, it really is kind of a quick story about the need for the kind of work that ABE does, which is really one of our major investments in our state that combines advancing educational knowledge and work skill development. If we're not keeping pace with those skill developments when it comes to digital technology, we're then not making a good investment. So this is a good big bang that we would get, I would argue, for a one-time grant that continues to protect and advance the bigger investment we make every year at ABE. And so hopefully the committee and the chair will consider it carefully as we go forward in constructing our bill. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Share it with you all.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. So the chair lays over House File 3887 for possible inclusion or further action at a later date. And there being no more business, the committee hearing is now adjourned.